24. The caterer's clam bake crew started Friday afternoon, digging a hole 2 feet deep and 15 feet across. They lined it with rocks, built a bonfire on top of the rocks, and let it burn, feeding it through the night with hardwood. In the morning, when the fire had burned down, they spread seaweed over the rocks and then began layering in clams, lobsters, corn on the cob, potatoes, and thick Portuguese sausages. They repeated the seaweed and the food layers until the pit was full. Then they put on a final layer of seaweed and stretched a tarpaulin over the pile while the hot stones made the seaweed steam and the food cooked. Another crew set up a vast striped tent with a pole peak at either end, from which flew Paradise Yacht Club banners. A full bar set up underneath it and beer kegs chilled in huge tubs of ice. By 2:30 in the afternoon, the island was already crowded. People came from the harbor in their own small boats or were ferried by the Paradise Yacht Club launch. People from town drove over the causeway and parked where they could. A 4-man police detail would try to manage the traffic and later, the clam bakers. Jesse stood beside Hardy Watkins, resting his elbows on the low cabin of the harbor boat as it idled near the outer harbor. Through the binoculars, Stiles Island was a swarm of tan legs, white shorts, tank tops, big hats, long dresses, pink cotton, blue ribbon, floral patterns, yellow linen. The smell of the bake drifted to him, edged with the smell of fresh, spilled beer. Jesse moved the glasses back to the Lady Jane, where a woman came over the side and joined others in the small launch. It might have been Blondie Martin. The launch pulled away from the Lady Jane and ran in a big, smooth curve toward the Stiles Island dock. "That's 9, Jesse said. "The boat should be empty." "You want to come in from the other side?" Hardy said. "Yes." Hardy opened the throttle gently and the harbor boat moved quietly through the small harbor chop, behind the screen of moored yachts, to the far side of the Lady Jane. He throttled back and let the boat drift in against the side of the yacht and held it there. "You see anyone heading for the boat," Jesse said, "give me a shout. If we get caught, I'll lie, and you'll swear to it, that I just went aboard thinking there was someone home and was about to leave when I found there wasn't."
"We doing something illegal?"
Hardy said.
"We are."
"I was hoping it would be something better than this."
Jesse went effortlessly over the side and onto the deck of the Lady Jane. Away from the low idle of the harbor boat, Jesse heard music coming from Stiles Island. There was no sound on the yacht.
"Hello?"
Jesse yelled.
No one answered.
He walked into the cockpit and stopped beside the helm.
"Hello?"
No one answered. He went down the short, wide teak stairway. It was a big boat, but there was no extra space. Jesse paused for a moment and yelled once more. No answer. Everything was built in. Dining table, seating for 6, bar, galley, a big plasma television screen, polished hardwood and shiny brass. A small corridor off the back of the dining room had staterooms along either side. Each had a built-in bed and bureau. The master suite had its own head. There were several other facilities tucked in among the staterooms. Jesse counted sleeping for more than 9, though it probably depended somewhat on gender and relationship. Everything looked neat and cozy and expensive and luxurious. The table was set. There were flowers in small crystal vases. Jesse wondered how it was in 35-mile-an-hour winds with a 6-foot sea running. The thought made him smile. The boat was empty. After his walkthrough, Jesse began to search each space. He began with the master bedroom. Most people hid the most incriminating stuff, Jesse knew, in their bedroom, or stateroom, or whatever the swabbies called them. There were women's clothes and toiletries as well as men's. There were sex toys in the top bureau drawer under some neatly folded sports shirts. One of the toys was a massager which was held onto the back of the hand with springs and imparted its vibration to the hand. Jesse remembered that when he was a small boy in Arizona, his grandfather had used one like it for scalp massage. Jesse smiled. Or maybe not. In the bottom drawer of the same bureau, among a lot of exotic woman's underwear,
was a stack of videotapes held together with a thick red elastic band. Jesse picked them up and took off the rubber band. The tapes were numbered with a magic marker, but there was nothing else to say what they were. Jesse glanced around the bedroom. In a wall cabinet was an entertainment center which included, Jesse was sure, a videotape player. Jesse studied the equipment. There seemed to be a computer involved. After a while, he shook his head. Defeated by technology. If I try this, I will fuck it up, and they'll know I was here. He glanced around the room. He didn't see anything that would help. He went to the closet and opened the bifold doors. The clothes were hung neatly and carefully spaced, men's and women's. On the top shelf were several long-billed caps and a stack of videotapes. Jesse took them down. They were unmarked and, he realized, unopened. He went back out and up the stairs to the helm and navigation area and found a magic marker, one of several, and a beer mug on the shelf by the steering wheel. He took it back downstairs, took out the stack of numbered videotapes, slipped one from the middle, number 5, took the wrapping cellophane off the new video, marked it number 5, slipped it in among the other marked tapes, put the red elastic back around them, and put the real number 5 inside his shirt. He put the other new videos back where he'd found them, crumpled the cellophane that he'd removed, and put it in his pocket. Let's hope it's not his kid's confirmation. Jesse went through the other rooms and found a lot that was titillating, but nothing that was useful. Then he went back and sat and looked at the master bedroom. He thought about the tapes. It could all be in there. How hard could it be? He studied the entertainment center. Okay. This is the remote. He studied the many buttons. Some had arrows or squares or two bars or dots. Some were labeled. He found a switch that was labeled all on. He found no other switch that said all off. So this must be the one. All on, all off. He pressed it. The set clicked on, the screen brightened, and in a moment there was a picture. Jesse studied it for a moment. He was looking at a small shower. He clicked the button that read CH. He was looking at a bed. The plaid spread looked familiar. For Christ's sake, it's on the boat. The bastard's got the place wired. Jesse stood and walked to the bedroom with the plaid spread. He placed a pillow in the middle of it and went back to the master bedroom. The bed on the screen now had a pillow in the middle of it. Jesse went back, replaced the pillow, and stood in the small bedroom looking at the ceiling. There were small recessed lights in the ceiling. Jesse examined them in the low ceiling. He could find nothing unusual. He went back to the master bedroom and clicked the channels. Each shower and each bedroom could be accessed on the screen, including the master bedroom. Jesse went and turned on one of the showers and came back. He could hear it. Sound and picture. He went back and shut off the shower. Then he went to the master bedroom and pressed the all-on button. The screen went black. Jesse whistled to himself softly. Master technician. Has to be through the ceiling lights. The fact that I can't figure it out means nothing. I can't even play the fucking VCR. He put the remote carefully back where he'd found it. He looked around. Everything looked the same as it had. Jesse went up on deck and over the side onto the harbor boat. Hardy eased it away from the Lady Jane and curled it inconspicuously back in toward the town wharf, moving slowly among the moored sailboats.